Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast about homebrew electronics and amateur radio. This is a program for people who like to melt solder and build their own rigs. For other episodes of the program, go to www.soldersmoke.com. For the latest Solder Smoke news, go to soldersmoke.blogspot.com. Please send feedback to n2cqr@yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Okay, good morning. It's Sunday, November 7, 2010. That makes this Solder Smoke 127. Hey, it's great to be back. I really enjoyed doing 126. Got a lot of good feedback. People seem to miss the show, and, well, I'm just delighted to be able to be back on the fiber optic cable here talking about electronics and homebrew radio and all that good stuff. People seem to like the audio on the last version, and I continue to fine-tune the audio of the program. I'm still using the same old microphone that I used in both London and Rome, and it's the real cheap little computer mic. And this is also another Ubuntu Linux version of Solder Smoke. People like the audio last time. I'm doing this on an old Tekra 8100 roadkill computer, and I'm not using any fancy audio equipment or any of the EQ devices that people have sent in. I haven't gotten them online yet. And oddly enough, the best audio reports I've received in a long time came from episode 126, and I didn't do any post-recording processing or anything like that. It was all just straight audio. The room acoustics here might be better than I had in Rome. I think that helps. And I think I inadvertently used a higher MP3 sampling rate, and I think that helped. It also made the file a bit bigger. The file was about 40 megs instead of the normal 20 megs, but that's okay. Nobody complained. I think the program made it through the ISPs and into the MP3 players and into the iPods, so maybe we'll continue this way. A lot of people commented that I sounded younger, and my joke on that was that it must be a Linux thing. You know, Linux is the software for the young people here, and I thought that I might sound even younger this week, because on my other computer, the evil EPC, E-Machines computer, I'm sorry, not EPC, the evil E-Machines computer, I upgraded from Jaunty Jackalope, which is a version of Ubuntu, to the latest version, Karmic Koala. What great names. I mean, it's a long way from a DX60 or a Sky Buddy or something like that, but Karmic Koala, yeah. So I got Karmic Koala running on the E-Machines machine, and I thought that I might use that to produce 127, but I don't think the sound card or the sound drivers in that computer are all that good. So back to the Tekra 8100, here we are, and I'm still using Jaunty Jackalope. We may move up to Karmic Koala here in a few weeks. I gotta say, Linux does cause its frustrations, and I don't think it's all tremendously user friendly. It's more for we could say for the Linux heads, but they've got some cool stuff in there. And in Karmic Koala, it's a silly thing, but they have a screensaver in Karmic Koala that features a fireworks display, and I tell you what, it's almost as good as real fireworks. So if you've got Karmic Koala on your machine, look for the fireworks display as a screensaver. And I find myself just sitting here watching the fireworks. All right, we're still getting settled here in the new house. And several folks wrote in and asked about culture shock and whether it's a difficult adaptation. And it is. The experts tell us that coming back to your home country is far more difficult than moving. to a foreign location or to a new foreign location. We found that to be true. It is difficult, but there are funny things that happen that kind of ease the pain a bit. And I'll just share with you a couple. It related to, I guess they're audio related, because I guess about a month after we moved into the new place, I started hearing this kind of creaking sound from one of the trees. We have a lot of trees. Maria counted 31 trees. And I'm sitting here, and all of a sudden, one of the trees, I hear it starting to creak. Now, this is a real concern. We have the kids playing in the backyard. The neighbors' houses are pretty close. We don't want a tree coming down on our house. And I thought, oh, wow, we're going to have the tree surgeon in here. Now, in this part of the country, tree surgeons are probably about as expensive as real surgeons. I don't know. You may even need to bring in a tree anesthesiologist if you're going to have them do any work on your on your property. So I was thinking, wow, this is going to cut into the solder smoke budget considerably. But I went out and I listened and looked, and sure enough, the tree was creaking and it was in a bad location. So I figured, oh man, here we go. So I put it in mind that, okay, I'm going to call the tree surgeon. We're going to get this taken care of. Later that day, Billy and I decided to go out for a walk through the neighborhood. We're walking down the street. We're about a block away from the house, and I hear the identical noise, the same kind of tree creaking. But we're not close to any big trees. The only thing we're close to is a telephone pole, power pole, you know? And I said, that's really weird. How could this telephone pole be creaking the same way? And we look up, and up there at the top of the telephone pole is the woodpecker. Now, woodpeckers in this part of the country seem to have a higher bit rate or bite rate, I guess, than the than the woodpeckers I was used to up in New York, because it sounded more like creaking than the tap, 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 tap of Woody the Woodpecker. But anyway, crisis averted. No need to do surgery on the tree. Another sound story. I drive to work every morning on the Washington Metro system, and I guess this system's getting a bit creaky too. But one thing I noticed was that every morning I'd be down there at the Washington Metro with all these kind of forlorn-looking commuters going into work, and they're playing this kind of weird abstract jazz in the background. And I'm thinking, gosh, this is awful. I mean, it doesn't really sound like music. I didn't know what it was, but it sounded sort of like weird. I guess the only way to put it is kind of modern abstract jazz that, you know, you can't really carry a tune. And I'm thinking they're doing this deliberately. This is going to make people even more down about having to ride to work on the metro. And I noticed that they're playing it in just about all the stations. And I, for a week or two, I was thinking, this is just strange. Somebody should write in. Can't they play something a little bit more upbeat and cheery? And then all of a sudden, I'm riding up on the escalator coming up out of the station, and I realize that it's not abstract jazz at all. It's just that the escalators, which are a major problem in the Washington Metro system, are badly in need of some WD-40, and what I was hearing was just not music, but a lack of lubrication. So anyway, I'm thinking about throwing a can of WD-40 in my briefcase and doing some on-the-spot maintenance there and get rid of this abstract jazz. Anyway, these are the things you go to when you go through when you move to a new country. But hey, it's all the pain is being eased by the presence of my beloved Boat Anchor radios. They have arrived. We got our final shipment out of storage. So stuff that I placed in storage while in Europe, well, in London and Rome, has now all arrived. And it's quite a lineup, gentlemen. I'm telling you, it's impressive. I have all the old Boat Anchors, of course, with the exception of the Drake 2B, over on a separate bench here in the corner of the shack. I'll tell you what we got. We have a Heathkit DX40. A Heathkit DX60B, and sitting on top of them, I have a VF1 VFO. My joke on this, I've said this one before, that it, you know, a DX40, a DX60, and a VF1 comes pretty close to adding up to a DX100, but not quite. You know, that VF1 is the same VFO that they had in the famed DX100 transmitter. And gosh, I had one as a kid, and I let it get away. I want one. That's one of the radios that I own. One of the only radios that I really have a yearning for. I want to get a DX100, and I'll get one while I'm back here. Also have a Hammerland HQ100 on the bench, a real simple broadcast band, shortwave broadcast band receiver. Broad as a barn door, but great for listening to AM. And it's got these fantastic, great Hammerland dials on it that I really like. And a while back, somebody in the boat anchors community was running a dial light contest. Which of the boat anchor radios had created the best dial light effect, the visual effect of the lamps inside the radio? And I nominated the Hammerland HQ100. What else do we have over there? We have a Lafayette HA600A. Not really a boat anchor. It's solid state, but it was the first shortwave receiver I ever had, and I bought one in a fit of nostalgia a few years back. I wanted to get a Lafayette HA600A, but I ended up just with the HA600, which is not quite the same. So I still may be in the market for an HA600A. Well, I can't buy anything until I sell some stuff, because this ham shack is just too chock full of radio junk. What else do we have over there? Oh, can't forget the HT-37, the Hammerland HT-37, the transmitter that got me through adolescence. Yeah, I bought this thing at the Crystal Radio Club in Valley Cottage, New York. And guys, I'm telling you, this thing is heavy. I almost threw my back out just lifting this thing up when the delivery men dropped it off here. I'm happy to report it's still in good shape. It's traditionally used with the Drake 2B and 2BQ multiplier, and through what can't possibly be a coincidence, the 2BQ and the 2B fit exactly on top of an HT37. Now you got to put a little fan in the back to suck out the heat from that HT37. You don't want to cook the 2B, but when you do that, it becomes one really, really fine rig. The HT37 is a phasing method sideband transmitter that will also do a double sideband and of kind of a poor variety of AM, not that good plate modulation that you get from a DX100, but nevertheless good. But it really shines on sideband, and everybody says it sounds really good. It's been in storage for a while, and it's getting on in years, so I took it easy, and I brought it up on a Variac gradually. And guys, I don't know how it's going to sound. I don't know if any of those caps in there have gone, and whether it'll have a lot of hum. I suspect it'll sound good, but I tell you for sure, it certainly smells good. You know, you get those old tubes, and the HT37's got a lot of tubes in it, and you heat them up, and there's a certain smell that permeates the shack. I guess it's the smell of the knack, and it just smells wonderful, and it brought back all kinds of memories. So the HT37 is performing superbly, at least in terms of smell. We'll see how it does with RF and audio here in a little while. Speaking of old radios, we've been listening to 75 meter AM. I was always a big fan of 75 meter AM. I guess that's the band and mode that brought me into this hobby. I used to listen to them on the HA600A. I found that that receiver jumped around a little bit, but it didn't matter if you're listening to the AM guys. So I used to listen to the New Englanders mostly on 75 meter AM, and there was a great, I guess this was in the late 1970s, and there was this wonderful community, mid-1970s, I guess, a wonderful community of AMers. They were all a few years older than I was. I was in junior high school and high school. They all seemed to be in college or about to go to college, mostly in New England, and they had these great roundtables, and it was a great, it had that feeling of fraternity and technical expertise, and the technical level was really high, and they, you know, it was also there was an also an us and them kind of mentality that I guess is important in any group of especially young guys. The them were the CBers and also the single sideband operators or the slop bucketeers, as they would call them. And a leader of this group was and is a fellow named Tim WA1HLR, a very very high level of technical expertise. The high level of technical expertise that Tim has makes him a real leader in this field, and it's always a pleasure to listen to him. I've had a couple of since we've been back. I've had a couple of occasions where I could listen in on Tim advising another AMer on modifications or how to get the most out of an old transmitter. It's a real pleasure. Glad to hear that Tim is doing well. It sounds like he's doing real well, and his signal is always very strong down here in Northern Virginia. So it's been a pleasure listening. I notice there's not as much activity on 3880 and 3885. Some of the activity seems to have shifted down to 3873. But I do hear some of the old groups that we used to listen to. I can hear the old military radio net and the DX60 net on the weekends. And in the it's a strange thing. In the evening, just as I'm getting her ready for bed, Maria, my 10-year-old daughter, will listen in with me on the the nightstand radio there, and she'll listen to a few minutes of the 75-meter AM gang. Now, on Saturday night, I have to do some censoring here, and I occasionally have to turn the thing off. You guys know what I'm talking about, but Maria does seem to enjoy it, and she asks questions about who are these people, and does everybody listen to them, or you know, I had to explain the whole thing about 75 meter AM. Hey, yeah, we've also got some radio waves actually being emitted from the new shack here. I got my DaVinci Code QRSS QRPP G0 UPL FSK transmitter for 30 meters going, and it's the same transmitter that I was using from Rome and from Ponticelli out there in the Sabine Hills, working fine. I had to do a repair on it, which I found quite pleasing. When I took it out of the storage box, it wasn't working. And it allowed me to do my first troubleshooting repair here in the new world. And I found that the oscillator transistor, the little MPF-102, was bad. So I popped a new one in there, and voila, the thing is going. Putting out a massive 20 milliwatts to 50 feet of AC line cord that I have strung out in trees very low to the ground. I turn it on, and I can see myself regularly on the grabber up in Ontario, on the grabber of the W1BW grabber in Maine, and the Pensacola grabber down there in Pensacola, Florida. So really amazing what happens with 20 milliwatts, 50 feet of AC line cord, and the Argo software that's doing most of the heavy lifting on this. New dimensions for QRSS and QRPP here, guys. Good stuff. I hope to get the Whisper rig going pretty soon also. A lot of fun. Also been doing some astronomy here. My telescopes have arrived, and for the first time in many years now, the first time ever, I have two telescopes. And yesterday we had Billy's 13th birthday party, and I took the two telescopes out into the front yard, aimed them both at Jupiter, and let the kids take a look, and we had some cul-de-sac astronomy here. A lot of fun. Jupiter was looking fine last night, and we have now a 4.5-inch Newtonian reflector. That's the one that I used way back in the Dominican Republic, out of storage and doing just fine. And of course the 6-inch reflector that Elisa got me for Christmas a few years back, also doing very very well. So a lot of fun. Okay, now we pause for a word from our sponsors. Well, this is where we would have our sponsors, but We don't have any sponsors yet, but we're looking for some. If you know of anybody out there, that any business, any kit manufacturer, any electronic company that would like to reach thousands and thousands of hardcore solder melters, please let them know about Solder Smoke. Pass to them my email address. That's soldersmoke, one word, at yahoo.com. And we'd be happy to talk to them about putting an ad here at this point. We're only looking at ads that would be kind of, that would fit in well with the program, that would provide useful information and opportunities for our listeners. We're not going to have anything really crazy or out there, but we would like some sponsors, and we think it would be good, and it would help support the program and help keep things going here at Solder Smoke headquarters. Let them know that our rates are reasonable and our staff is very friendly. So if you have anybody that might be interested in putting an ad here, let us know, and we'll talk to them, and that could be some fun. There are other ways that you can help keep the podcast going, and I'll just mention a few of them here. You could buy a copy of the book or urge others to do so, Solder Smoke, Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics. Just go to www.soldersmoke.com/book.htm, and you could find out about the book. You could also just take a look at, you could find it on Amazon.com. Just search for Solder Smoke. There's not a lot of other books out there like that. And you could also find it through the lulu.com site. Another thing you could do is you could put links to the soldersmoke.com webpage or the soldersmoke.blogspot.com blog site on your websites. That helps a lot. Another thing you could do is begin all of your Amazon.com shopping on the link that I have on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com site. When you do that, Amazon sends us a little bit of money every time you buy something having arrived at the site through our ad. You could buy some t-shirts, bumper stickers, and coffee mugs at the Solder Smoke store at Cafe Press. There's also a link to this at the blog at soldersmoke.blogspot.com. I keep thinking that it's time for me to take this store down. It's costing me a bit of money every month to keep it open, and it's a real money loser, but the products there are just so good. And Christmas is coming, guys, so, get some coffee mugs, get some t-shirts, get some, even have sweatshirts there now that it's cold, and, tell the world about your interest in Solder Smoke. Speaking of which, you could just tell other people about the book, about the podcast. Word of mouth advertising helps a lot. And finally, just keep those cards, letters, and emails coming in. I really like to get the feedback. So hopefully next week or next episode, we'll have a real sponsor to plug in here. But now we return to our program. All right, back to the show. Been doing some reading here. Especially when you're traveling, when the gear hasn't arrived, get a little bit more time to catch up on the reading, and got a lot of good material coming my way. The fellows at GQRP have been taking care of me as always, and making sure that I have the latest editions of Sprat, that fine publication. Guys, if you're not subscribed to Sprat, as they used to say when I was in the Army, you're just wrong. You really need to get this thing. It's a wonderful publication, the best thing going, I think, in the QRP world, or in the world of ham radio, for that matter. I could do without a lot of the other magazines, but I think I'd have real problems if Sprat stopped coming. I'm a little behind, so I'll share with you some of the stuff that I picked up in recent and not so recent issues. I really got a kick out of issue number 141. The winter 2009-2010 edition, and there's a, this is just typical of the kind of thing that you get in Sprat, and I'll just share for you an excerpt. It's from an article called AGC Mod for the Elcraft KX1. The article is written by Rich Heslip, VE3MKC, up there in Canada, and the opening line is what really blew me away. And this is what Spratt's all about. You're not going to be able to read things like this in other publications. Rich begins the article. I have to admit, I don't own a KX1. I built the KX1 RX. I built the KX1 receiver, ugly style, and was very impressed by the performance of this simple superhet design by NK6R and WA6HHQ. It's a very sensitive, quiet receiver, and the variable bandwidth IF filter works brilliantly. The one thing I felt could be improved was the AGC. And then Rich, of course, goes on to describe his modification for the KX1 AGC circuit, even though he doesn't own a KX1. I think, and I'm going to make a proposal here, I think Elecraft should send Rich a KX1. Somebody should send him a KX1, or at least some well-deserved congratulations for coming up with a nice mod and working on a receiver that he doesn't even own, having built it ugly style. Very fine business. That's what Spratt's all about. That's very good. Now, moving on, let's see. Then I got the summer 2010 and autumn 2010 issues. Guys, I'm sorry I missed the Rishworth GQRP Festival. I wish I was there, and I saw the ads for it and the announcements and heard about it on the GQRP list. I know a good time was had by all. Sorry I missed it. Maybe next year. But man, these two issues of the magazine are just chock full of great stuff. The summer 2010 issue has an article on an SMD soldering jig, putting the BidX20 on 12 meters. An article on the Limerick Sudden kit that the club has put out. Just really terrific stuff. The autumn 2010 issue. Man, there's one thing in here that really caught my eye, and that's the Homebrew SBL1. This is by David Smith, G4COE, up there in Lancashire, and really an interesting article. You know, I'm a big fan of the SBL1 diode ring mixers. I like them because they're kind of like an IC, but they're an IC that you can understand. They're not a mystery box. You could crack them open and take a look, and you could see little coils in there. You could see little diodes. And David begins his article. The price of a SBL1 mixer is around £7 or so. We've been making and using these for years in one form or another, so let's make one. A drop-in replacement for our beloved SBL1. And for £7, you can make half a dozen or so. Fine business. There you go. Great job there, David, and thanks to George, to G3RJV, and all the folks at the GQRP Club, Tony Fishpool, for sending this along. Thanks very much, guys. Wonderful. As always, it's a good day when Spratt's in the mailbox. Another thing I've been reading here, something you guys would be interested in. I mentioned this a while back. It's a book called Sky Buddies, the second book of Dash the Dog-Faced Ham by Jeff, K1NSS. Jeff sent me the copies of his two books. These are kind of graphic novels. You wouldn't really call them comic books. They're much, much better than that, but they're all about ham radio. And this one, the second book, is about Jeff's experience as a teenage radio amateur. And he was quite a ham. He becomes Dash the Dog-Faced Ham, and it's all about Sky Buddies and his various hobbies and being a novice and what it's like to be a radio amateur in a high school in which people can't really identify, what some of the other novices were like, some of the rigs that they worked on, the antennas that they put up. Really very, very nice. And Jeff, thanks for sending me the books. Fellas, you could pick these publications, Jeff's books, up there also on lulu.com. And you know, you could save yourself some money in shipping by ordering the Solder Smoke book and the books of Jeff, K1NSS, at the same time. You get a kick out of them. Again, Christmas is coming. Ask the XYL to get you these fine publications. You won't be sorry. You'll have a lot of fun. I got a new issue, continuing with the reading here. Tim Walford out there in Somerset has sent me the latest edition, autumn 2010, issue 69 of the Journal of the Constructors Club. The journal is called Hot Iron. And, you know, this thing, when it arrives in the mail, I don't know, it's got, you know, hot iron. I don't know. To my ear, it's got possibly kind of, for those who don't know what it's all about, it's got vaguely kind of pornographic possibilities in there, you know. And I found out about this because the other day I was, this was confirmed to me because I got on the Washington Metro. I found myself a seat, and I sat down, reached into my pocket, pulled out this publication, opened it up, and I noticed that the lady sitting next to me was kind of taking a look at what I was going to see. And as soon as she saw that the title was Hot Iron, she kind of shimmied away from me a little bit and looked out the window. I thought she was going to change her seat. Little did she know how innocent this all is. But a great publication from Jim G3 PCJ. I always like to get this one. It's very nice. It's got a great article in here by Andrew Atkinson on QRSS, the real QRP, doing more with less. Yes, Andrew, indeed, a lot less. Great article describing the QRSS system that we've been talking so much about. All kinds. There's an article about invisible antennas, invisible areas, aerials. Very, very nice. Enjoy it. Thanks very much, Tim, for sending that along, and I suggest that you guys subscribe to that one also. Let's see what else we got here. You know, I don't subscribe to this one, but I came across it. Billy is continuing with fencing. He was doing fencing, scherma, in Italy, and he's continued here. And we were over at the fencing place last week, and I found a copy of Wired magazine in there, and just started browsing through it, and there we are. What is it? This is the, what issue are we on? Do they have that on the cover here? Man, Wired can't even tell you what issue it is. September 2010. In there on page 34, they have an article about Ho-Joon Sang's homebrew satellite is ready for blastoff. It says here, some geeks glued together model Death Stars. Ho-Joon Sang built a fully functional satellite dubbed GOD, the Global Orbiting Device. It's set to become the first commsat designed and financed by a private citizen to reach orbit. I don't know about that. What about all of our satellites? Yeah. The tiny, about 60 cubic inch, and cheap, around $500 device, is a masterpiece of DIY engineering. Sang hacked together a solar cell, a lithium-ion battery, an Arduino board modded to withstand cosmic rays, and four LED lights powerful enough to be seen from back on Earth. To talk to God, he uses a jerry-rigged communication device he's wearing in the photo above. The cube will transmit Morse code messages that should be visible to an entire hemisphere. It's all part of what Sang calls the OSSI, Open Source Satellite Initiative. We've got to check this guy out, fellas. This sounds like an interesting project. Seems to be a little bit of hype there. AMSAT was doing this a long time ago. But nevertheless, Mr. Sang seems to have a very interesting project. He definitely seems to have the knack. And good luck to him on the new space adventure. Speaking of adventures, you know, several listeners sent me links to a new YouTube video that really, really caught my eye. And really, I mean, this is amazing. This is an amazing project. It's from a person that we've known about for some time, and a real aficionada of the knack. I'm talking about Jerry Ellsworth. Jerry's a very unusual person. She is. She's got an amazing website. She has an amazing career as an engineer. She's largely self-taught, if not completely self-taught. I see her giving lectures at Caltech and other places. Her father, I think the story is that her father was a knack victim, a real electronics fan, and so she grew up around this stuff and really got into it, and has produced some really amazing projects. The latest, I think, is among her most amazing, and it's homebrew transistors. what Jerry's doing, and you'll the link to the video is on the soldersmoke.blogspot.com site. She's cracking open 1N34 diodes and, quote, harvesting the germanium inside those diodes. She cracks them open, and she shows you how she does it. And then she takes a phosphor bronze contact, puts the contact in touch with the germanium, thus forming a point contact transistor. And then she uses this transistor in the video to make an audio frequency oscillator. And because it oscillates, you know that she's got real transistor action there. So, you know, we've talked in the past about homebrew tubes, and there are guys out there who've built homebrew vacuum tubes. And we've all, I guess, made homebrew diodes with a bit of galena or fool's gold. We make crystal radios. We've even made diodes out of old razor blades, things like that. But here we have homebrew transistors. And I put in my comment about this video that Jerry Ellsworth makes us all look like a bunch of pathetic appliance operators. Yes, store-bought transistors. Oh, your transistors are store-bought? I'm sorry, I'm running homebrew transistors here. You know, when there were people talking about this video on the QRPL list, and one comment, and it was the first thing that came to mind, one of the first things I thought about when I saw this thing is, how long will it take Michael, AA1TJ, to produce a working rig with these kinds of transistors, and how long will it be before he makes contact with this rig with his partner in homebrew madness, Sieb, up there in New England? Let's see, when will the Wizards of New England make a breakthrough here and follow up on this this useful technique demonstrated so wonderfully by Jerry Ellsworth? Jerry, thanks for making that video. You know, it reminded me of a book that really describes the theory behind point contact crystals, point contact transistors, and that's Crystal Fire. I don't have the names of the authors. It's over on my shelf there. But the name of the book is Crystal Fire, and it describes the work of the inventors of the transistors, Shockley, Bardeen, and, oh man, I'm sorry, I can't forget the other guy. I can't remember the other guy. But anyway, you know, the Bell Labs folks who brought us transistors there in the late 1940s. And I remember the book, it gives a pretty good description of the theory behind point contact transistors, but the book could have used a few more diagrams. And as I watched Jerry's video, I thought, man, they really could have used Jerry Ellsworth's talents there, because she could have made that book a whole lot better with a few of her diagrams and a few of her very clear descriptions. I'm happy to report that Jerry is currently reading Solder Smoke Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics. I sent her a copy, and I asked her to take a look at it. She's very interested in reaching out to young people who are interested in electronics. I'm trying to get Solder Smoke Global Adventures in Wireless Electronics in the hands of those young people, and I'm trying to get the book, bring the book to the attention of the kind of broader electronics homebrewer hacker community out there. So Jerry is reading the book. She tells me she's reading it in small bits from time to time. I hope she's enjoying it. I hope she likes it. And she told me she's going to write a review, so I hope it's a good one. But Jerry, if you're listening, thanks very much for that video. Very, very nice work. You know, and as I was watching the video, I felt a little bit bad about something that I wrote in the book. And I hope Jerry and the other YLs and XYLs out there will forgive me, because I made what I guess could be construed as a sexist comment. I noted that the knack is mostly a guy thing. And I put a comment in there that sometimes the National Radio Amateur Radio Associations seem to try a bit too hard to present it as a hobby that is enjoyed equally by both genders. And I think that that's a bit of a stretch, because in my experience, it's like 90-95% a guy thing. But in saying that, I was just sort of commenting on the demographics and I didn't mean to be disparaging in any way. We all know that there are women out there who are involved in electronics and ham radio that have made amazing contributions to the hobby and to the radio art, and Jerry is certainly among them. This morning, as I was getting ready to record here, an email came in from AJ8T, and the title of the email was, "This woman has definitely got the knack." Now, I thought that this was another report, one of many that I'd received about Jerry Ellsworth's video on the transistors. But when I opened it up, I found out that it was from about a completely different woman. And her name is Tatjana van Vark. And this lady in the Netherlands, get this, fellas, has homebrewed her own version of an Enigma machine. Not just that, but she's got a number of other projects that she's been involved in. And they're just amazing. Amazing workmanship. Almost too good to believe. I mean, I really thought, could this... This is one of those things where you say, could this really be true? But I guess it is. On the Enigma machine page, and I will put a link to this up on the blogspot.com page, Tatjana says that she will not release the mechanical or electrical data on her Enigma machine until somebody cracks a code that she has placed on the page. She's encoded some haiku. And until somebody cracks the code, Tatjana's not going to release the design details on her version of the Enigma encoding machine. So, pun intended here, guys, get cracking. I know a Solder Smoke listener out there will be able to crack this code and open up for us the details of Tatjana's Enigma machine. Check out the site. You guys will really like this one. It's amazing. Guys, that brings us to the portion of the program. You know what I'm talking about. Those of you who have sensitive ears might want to put your fingers in them right now. Here it comes.
Solder Smoke Mailbag.
I love it.
Indeed. Yeah, Solder Smoke Mailbag. A lot of good mail. A lot of it's been accumulating. Got a good one from David, WA5DJJ. He's really into the QRSS, QRPP work, and he's been doing some great stuff. I think he's got a grabber up. I know he's got signals on the air. And he came up and he invented a phrase that I think will become part of the QRP lexicon. He says he is doing the QRP limbo. Cue the limbo music at this point. Dave says he's doing the QRP limbo, and that is that he keeps reducing the power levels on his QRSS transmitter and sees how low he can go and still be picked up by the grabbers. Fine business, Dave, and you get credit for that phrase, QRP limbo. Bert, WF7I, writes again from University of Virginia, Charlottesville. He is the, coordinator of the University of Virginia Radio Club. I called him the faculty advisor, but he pointed out that he's still a graduate student himself, so I guess he's the coordinator, but he seems definitely to be the leader of the pack out there. So he was the one who told us about having to take down a portion of the rhombic because it was too close to the bike path. And you know, I know a lot of you guys like me were thinking, well, that might have been a bit too cautious. You know, bike riding is an inherently risky activity, and those people, if they have to ride past or into a rhombic antenna, well, that's just the risk they take. That's why they wear helmets, right? But Bert was a good citizen. He took that portion of the rhombic down. He sends along some website links to the UVA Radio Club. Guys, they have what might be the ideal site for an amateur radio club. It's located, get this, in the building that used to house a nuclear reactor at University of Virginia, Charlottesville. and it looks like a building that would hold a nuclear reactor. They've got the radio club in there. It looks really good. So thanks, Bert, for sending that along. Good luck with the antennas. Got an important bit of email from This one from our friend Jerry in R5A out there in South Dakota. Jerry starts out, he tells us that he's getting into AM and boat anchors himself. You know, Jerry's been an important part of the QRP homebrew community for a long time. He's a regular participant in the QRP roundtable on Echolink. He's been real kind to me. He sent me parts and kits and all kinds of stuff when I was in Europe. A real fine business radio amateur. You know, Jerry's in need of an important spare part himself right now. And, you know, I don't mean to make light of it, but I guess we can put it in the search for parts context. Jerry's had some serious health problems. And he's on dialysis several times a week now. And it definitely cuts into his workbench and operating time. And he's looking for a kidney donation. And if anybody out there, I know we have some folks who work in the medical field, some folks who might have some contacts in this area. If you could help Jerry find this kind of important spare part, not for his rig, but for himself, let me know. We got a radio amateur out there, a brother Ham, who's hurting and could use some help. And if anybody has any words of wisdom or advice or contacts in this area, please let me know and I'll pass it on to Jerry. But in the meantime, Jerry, keep melting that solder. Bring some magazines with you when you head off for the dialysis session. Hope the winter's kind to you out there in South Dakota. I know it can be rough, but ham radio will help you get through it. And keep on producing those rigs, and I'm sure the needed spare part will come through here sooner or later, and you'll be okay. All right, let's see what else. Peter. VE1 BZI writes that he could hear crickets during Sutter Smoke 126. A lot of guys wrote in with this. He gave me a report of 599 chirp or 599 cricket. I guess that's a testament to the awesome audio power of Audacity in Ubuntu. No crickets now. I think the temperature's dropped and the crickets are gone, but I don't know what else you guys are hearing. It's pretty quiet here in the shack this morning, but thanks, Peter, for the report on the crickets. David, KB1BED, he says that although I'll never be on Oprah, he suggests how about getting Solder Smoke on NPR Science Friday. Hey, I've been listening to it. It's a great show. I'd love to be on it. Funny, my wife made the same suggestion earlier in the week. It's in my experience with books, it's these kind of appearances are, they look easy to arrange, but actually there's a lot of competition, and I'm not sure that the folks at NPR Science Friday would all be that into our kind of science, although they might be interested. If anybody has any connections there or connections with any kind of similar shows, please let me know. We'd like to take advantage of it and get the word out about Solder Smoke, the podcast, the book, and the amazing world of electronic home brewing that we're all involved in here. Actually, the guy who gave me the 599 cricket report was Mark K5LXP. He also commented on the crickets and suggests that I get out to 4 days in May this year, being that it's a lot closer. Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks a lot, and good for this. Thanks for the suggestion there, Mark. Jeff VE9. JJS, he read the book, he liked it, and said that it confirmed for him that he has the knack. He sent along an article about the secret life of Dave Clark, a Canadian HF radio guy who did some important work for Harris. Dave recently passed on, but the article was very interesting, and thanks for sending that along, Jerry. Andy, GM0NWI, sends in a very nice message from Bonnie, Scotland. Thanks for sending that along, Andy. Andy is a very fine business radio amateur who's had to overcome some serious health problems himself. He's doing very well, and he makes some very kind offers for assistance here for the Solder Smoke effort. Yeah, Andy, if you could help us out in the way that you mentioned, that would be really, really great. Thanks a lot. Dave, W2DAB, writes in about the 75th anniversary of Howard Armstrong's first AM broadcast from the Palisades across the river from New York City. And apparently a group is putting together a memorial transmission. They're going to recreate the first broadcast, and there's a website available about that. I'll try to get it up on the Solder Smoke blog. Thanks for sending that in, Dave. Michael, we mentioned him before. Michael, AA1TJ, and Seeb were both at the Deerfield Ham Fest. Sorry I missed it. Mike has recently turned to tubes himself. This seems to be a wave that's sweeping through the Solder Smoke QRP community. Michael is building radios with old tubes, 24As, I think they are. Michael and Seeb were both at the Deerfield Ham Fest. I'm sorry I missed it. Man, I would have thought about riding all the way up there just to meet them. I understand the weather was rough at that Deerfield, but the hardcore crew made it through, and it seems like a good time was had by all. Jim, W2ENN, catching up on old Solder Smoke episodes, and he got to the episode right where I think it was 99 or so, where I was soldering the chip in upside down in my frequency counter. I think Tony Fishpool had sent me the chip, and in great enthusiasm, I took it out, popped it in, and soldered it in completely upside down on a double-sided PC board. Man, you know, I share these episodes with you guys just as a public service, so you don't feel so bad when you do something similarly dumb. Jim was kind enough to describe something silly that he did, but I have to say, Jim, mine was much dumber. So you made me feel better, but I think mine was an even sillier mistake. So anyway, take heart, guys. Anybody who's out there done something dumb at the workbench, just listen to Solder Smoke episode 99. It'll make you feel better. Thanks for reminding us of that, Jim. Got a nice email from Italy. Giancarlo I7SWX writes in that he and his friends have put together a nonprofit organization called the Hurricane Association. Their intent is to design and build a dual band 40-meter, 20-meter QRP rig that will be donated to hams in third world countries. It's going to be a pretty advanced design, and Giancarlo has some problems on concerns about whether he's doing the right things in terms of re-exporting some of the chips that they get. I think there are some restrictions on U.S. manufactured chips and whether they can be re-exported. I'm going to try to find somebody who might be able to help answer the questions. In the meantime, Giancarlo and the group are looking for donations to help in what sounds like a worthwhile effort. So get in touch with him. I think if you just Google him, you'll find his site. I'll try to get it up on the Blogspot page also. Let's see what else we have here. Where is it here? Let's see. And one more thing in the mailbox that I wanted to mention here. Ah, yes. Paul, K3PG, writes that Solder Smoke has caused him to get into the Drake 2B, the world of the Drake 2B, and he says that he noticed that, and apparently he's been following this quite closely, that the long summer hiatus of Solder Smoke has caused Drake 2B prices to drop noticeably. That when we were doing the podcast regularly from London and Rome, prices seemed to be rising fairly steadily. But that when I moved, and there were several months there where we weren't doing the program, prices seemed to have dropped. And this is a real concern to people who have put their retirement savings in this odd form of investment. I said that there seems to be a number of people out there. Gentlemen, we're joined now by the lovely and talented Maria Patricia. Say hello, Maria.
Hello.
Tyson the cat has also come in. He's nuts. You might hear him. You can't hear the crickets, but you can hear Tyson. Tyson's hungry. He's telling Marie he wants to eat. Anyway, K3PG says that we had an impact on the Drake 2B prices. Speculators take note. Solder smoke is back, so those prices should be rising dramatically as we speak. All right, let's see. Thanks for that note there, from K3PG. Thanks a lot, Paul. All right, let's see. That brings us to the end of Solder Smoke Mailbag. All right, guys, let's see. Looking at the clock, we're at about 54 minutes. It's time to wrap it up. I'll just give you a preview of what we're doing here. Yesterday, I found the box with the coaxial cable in it. Some of this stuff might actually still be in good shape. Found another box with a whole big piles of kind of AC line cord. You know where I'm going. The temperature is dropping, so it's going to get real cold out there, which makes it, of course, the perfect time to build some antennas. And I think I'm going to be throwing some dipoles up into some of those 31 trees. Maria, how many trees do we have, Maria?
31.
Into some of those 31 trees will soon be supporting some sky hooks here for N2CQR. So I'll be reporting on that in the next episode, and you guys might be hearing some robust signals from Halicrafter's HT37 in Northern Virginia. Also looking to get back into contact with some of the ham radio groups here in this area, the Nova QRP Club. They seem to have moved a little bit further out towards Dulles Airport. Traffic here can be beastly, guys. So I don't know if I'm going to be making it to the Nova QRP meetings, but I'm going to try. There's also an AMRAD group here in Arlington close by, so I might get in touch with them. And of course, there's the Vienna Wireless Society. Vienna Wireless used to do a midwinter ham fest called Frostfest in February, I think. And guys, I am desperately in need of a ham fest. All this stuff arrived from storage. I'm not going to be buying. I'm going to be selling. I got to get rid of some of this stuff. We got to make some room in the shack. The place is filled almost to bursting. So I've got a big box of stuff that's going to the ham fest, a bigger box of books for the ham fest, and I'm thinking that Frostfest, if it's still being held, would be the appropriate time to unload some of this really fine radio junk. As I said before, it's really great to be back. Hope you guys enjoyed 127. See you next time. 7-3 from Northern Virginia. Say bye, Maria.
Bye.
Say ciao, bravi ragazzi.
Ciao, bravi ragazzi.
Molto bene.